The Bob Rivers Show, featuring Bob, Spike, and Joe. Ladies and gentlemen, you're about to hear of a showdown in Amish country. Patty Levitt recently purchased a unique barn in Delafield, Wisconsin. She wants to open a furniture store in it, and, just about everybody in town is unhappy. I was mistaken. She didn't paint the smiley face on the barn?
No, this smiley face has been there for many years.
All right. She purchased it that way. Strange people would be upset because the bright yellow barn with the big smiley face was designed to make you smile. Turns out the local Amish community considers a smiley face an affront to their faith.
And any face on a building. They don't believe in faces on buildings.
Bite me.
Oh, man.
I would repaint the side of the building. It would say, bite me, you Amish people.
But she's selling Amish furniture, so there's a little problem.
Plus, you'd have to write, bite thee. Yeah.
Hi, Patty.
Hello.
So, what's the deal?
We just got it approved. It was the night before last that we can paint it and take the smiley face down.
You're bowing to Amish pressure?
Well, it's not Amish pressure. It's that the building has been dormant for a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
And I'm afraid that it would take us a long time to build up any clientele. I mean, every time they've come in, there's been nothing there. So we knew it needed drastic changes just to have people come back in.
So you bought it to make a business out of it. What was it before?
Well, it was originally a farmer's barn, so the building is 100 years old.
All right, and it's a landmark.
It's a landmark, yeah.
People drive by, they see the smiley face. It's probably, you say it's dormant, but it's probably been putting smiles on people's faces for years.
For 20 years.
See, I'd be on the side of the people that don't want the smiley face down.
Well, there's quite a few of them.
Yes.
But I understand Patty's sense of that you have to let people know there's been a change or you're not going to get any new business.
Right.
Well, paint a mustache on it. That's a change.
Well, and the smiley face is a very whimsical. I said if I was opening a toy store, I'd be more than happy to leave it yellow with a smiley face.
Uh-huh.
But it does not fit my image.
And besides, you want to sell Amish furniture, so you have to be. You have to be on the Amish side. I get it.
The Amish, you cannot have any faith on anything.
Why?
It's not just a building. Only God can create a faith.
So they won't use like a postage stamp with the president's face?
That's a good point. I'm sure they do because they need to mail. I mean, everything we do is through the mail.
Money has a face on it?
They use no dollars.
They don't use dollars?
No dollars with faces.
Well, what do they get for their furniture?
Trade.
Cheese? Milk?
I don't know.
They do use dollars.
Dollars, but they're dolls.
George Washington is not even smiling.
But they're what, Patty?
They're dolls. Like no Amish doll has a face on it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, what
and
kind
there's
of...
no mirror. And what I have the hardest time with is that you cannot take a picture of them. So they have no pictures of their children or anything.
So the Amish must hate the Japanese. They get out of the buses. Yeah.
Hey, Patty, what if you took the smiley face and put one of those Amish beards without a mustache on it?
Well, that's been recommended.
Yeah,
and,
that'd be great. Happy Amish furniture.
So take away, just have a big yellow circle with a beard on it.
You got
you're caving to pressure.
Yeah.
No, she's just doing it.
You don't want just another red barn in Wisconsin. You're going to be one of thousands.
We already have one store, and it's red and white. And it's the Amish Barn Furniture and Gifts. And we went looking for another barn to open a second store. This was perfect. It's right on 94, which is very busy, and it's a barn, and it was for sale. And we thought, we hit the jackpot. So
All right. Anyway, so you're caving to pressure. You're giving in. That's fine. Tell us a little about Amish furniture. Is it good stuff?
It's wonderful.
It is great stuff because obviously they have...
And depending. I mean, not just because they're Amish doesn't mean they're the best. But when you go through and really find the best carpenters, it is a beautiful piece of furniture.
They got no distractions. They will work on that bench for a month, and there's nothing else. There's no, there's no TV, there's no video games, there's nothing to take anything away. So they do a good, solid job.
Yes.
What does it cost, however? Does the Amish person, do they do a good job haggling? Do they get a good buck?
They are very shrewd.
Yeah,
they
very
not,
shrewd.
They cannot
yes.
haggle.
They want those faces on those dollar bills, don't they? Lots of them.
Yes.
They don't bargain with you. They say, this is the price, take it or leave it?
That is. And they don't care if you buy it or not. It just doesn't matter. They're not after...
Because they don't need the money.
They're not... To be wealthy is not good either. I mean, you can't...
Then why can't you give me this desk for half price?
Because thy lord has commissioned thee to make thy chair and benches for this rate. And that money will go into a silo full of dead presidents that we will look down upon.
Money goes into the community, that's for sure.
Are they give is older money community?
Well, no, but like if somebody needed to go to the hospital, the whole community, you know, chips in and they come in with cash.
How many Amish people, like, in your neighborhood? Lots?
Oh, none right here. No,
okay, how far away are they?
Oh, we drive about 3 hours to this one community where we buy most of our stuff.
Got it.
So everything is done through the mail, and we drive once a week to pick up.
To the Amish. When you pull in, how do they treat you?
Well, now they know us quite well, but it was a long time. You know, I said we had to start with cash, and maybe a year later we could write a check, and 3 years later we finally got 30 days. I mean, we know them very well, and it was very hard going, and that's another reason why I don't dare jeopardize the relationship.
Have the prices gone up since the barn incident? Have thy benches become more expensive?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Are they gouging you at all because of this thing?
Oh, no.
No. Mm-mm. All right. Well, and you know, the Amish people are just like any other people, though. In spite of their front that they put up, I mean, a couple of years ago, there were a couple of Amish teenagers arrested for selling coke.
Sure, and that's certain communities. I would never make that a general statement.
No? You really don't? You really think they are?
Oh, I heard all Amish people are coke dealers.
I did, too.
No.
Different, you know, areas are different. These in Wisconsin, this community that we buy from is very strict.
I imagine so.
Yeah.
I bet the kids, though, they probably look at you and almost beg you to take them away from that. I mean,
I don't think so.
They like being Amish kids?
They
don't
like it.
It's the only thing they know.
As long as that's the case, then they love it.
They love it, and they only have an eighth grade education, so they can't really leave.
Do you have a website where we can see your furniture?
Oh, I don't. I'm sorry to say.
Can you buy Amish furniture online?
Oh,
yes,
you can buy anything online.
Really? Okay. So you could without ever meeting them.
There's an Amish Heritage line that we carry, and they have a website.
Got it. All right. And, well, that sounds good. Good luck to you with that. I personally think you ought to do something, you know, something creative with the barn to keep it a landmark. Because I do think that the Amish are imposing their will on the local community.
And the local community, as I understand, there's hundreds of people that want you to keep that
thing. If it's 3 hours away, I'd tell them to go bite me. But again, I understand you're in business with them, so that probably wouldn't, work.
No.
But you know, what else can you do to the barn to make it look cool?
Well, we have big plans for it. And really, we had no idea that they would even care. The building is in shambles. It really needs a lot of work. The wood is rotting and... all the windowsills need to be replaced. So we thought they would just welcome us with open arms.
Mm.
And we were so surprised to get this reaction.
Tell me about the locals. Are they, are they pretty inbred out there? It's a small town?
No, it's a very high-end suburb of Milwaukee. They're beautiful homes. And
so it's not a real tiny town. I'm trying to picture
it. It's growing. It's not real large, but it hooks on to all the suburbs to Milwaukee, so you don't really know that you've left, a big city.
How did the barn get a big yellow smiley face on it to begin with? Hippie commune or something?
It was just a man that had bought it, and he had everybody, I guess he said he heard on the radio that the biggest attraction sign, most visible sign, was yellow with black lettering. So that's what he went for. And everybody in the barn that worked at that time had to wear yellow shirts, and it was all just a theme that he went with.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Patty, thanks a lot for your time. Good luck with the Amish furniture.
Thank you.
At least you don't have to live with them. That's something.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.
In the news this morning, a story out of Saudi Arabia that resonates. Saudi Interior Minister Prince Nayef has no intention of allowing women to drive. Women are fighting for their right to drive.
I didn't know they couldn't drive. I mean, I know it's conservative over there, but...
I'm telling you, a country with no women drivers...
Can't be all bad.
That's not... Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not terrible.
I'd let them back in the U.N. or something. I don't know.
Do something. They're in the U.N.
I know.
Well, we have great relations with the Saudis as far as Middle Eastern countries go. I mean, they've got oil, so we love them.
Yeah. Saudi Arabia is the only Persian Gulf state that bans women from driving.
Wonder what the Saudi traffic accident rate is. I bet it's a lot lower than other.
Wouldn't it be interesting to know?
Yeah.
According to Prince Nayef, there are no studies on the subject. They haven't done it. Asked about identity cards, which currently are reserved only for men, he said, "As I've said before, everything comes in its own time."
Not in my time.
Not in my time. And women who wish to draw money from a bank now have to use family IDs. They don't even get their own personal ID card. Can the women buy liquor?
I don't know if the women can buy liquor, but just to go withdraw money from the bank to go to the store, see, it's all our money. It's not the women's money. So they have to, like, have a family card that says, I belong to this man, and I'm entitled to get some of his money to provide for him.
We're not going to get a call, but let's ask anyway. Is there any Saudi Arabian listening? See, the odds.
Yeah.
Small. And if there is one listening, probably very busy at this time of the morning. We know this. We know the women have to cover up. We know that the Jennifer Lopez, the J-Lo clothes, will sit on the rack... And nobody's, you know...
Ain't nobody buying J-Hos.
Nobody's going to buy that stuff there.
And we know there's very little crime there because most crime is punished by whacking something off.
Is that still true?
Yes.
That's what I hear.
Yes, it is.
Do we have any Saudi Arabians in the audience or even anybody who's been there? 888-947-8338.
They're going to call with no hands? I can't pick up the phone. I'm trying to call, but I have no hands. I'm a two-time shoplifter. If you're a woman in Saudi and you want to drive, you got a good argument. You're not going to be putting makeup on behind the wheel.
That's true.
You know, you're going to be a
little
safer.
But with your face covered, what can you see? I mean, you're
not going to be on the cell phone with a veil over your mouth.
I find that sexy, by the way.
The veil?
The whole covered up thing.
Do you?
Yeah. Especially the older I get.
Okay. That's kind of wild.
Well, I mean, you know...
The mystery?
Well, you leave something to the imagination. Well, they leave tons to the imagination.
I'd go for the I Dream of Jeannie mid-drift open veil kind of look, but the whole head to toe, the only thing open is like a an NFL helmet. You got this much in front of your eyes open. That's it.
Hmm.
That's not attractive at all to me.
Mike's pre-screening a caller now. It's probably someone pretending to be Saudi Arabian. Okay. All right, here it is. It's Aaron in Las Vegas. Aaron, hello.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Good. You don't sound all that Saudi Arabian.
No, I got a comment about the Amish.
Okay, go ahead.
Got a buddy that is from Wisconsin I work with out here in Vegas. He said here recently ago, he was talking to his friends there, and there was an ad in a singles magazine or something or other that the Amish would pay you to come and have sex with their daughter.
Come on.
No.
So they can put a new seed into the communities.
New seed?
Yes.
Well, slap a satchel on my back and call me Johnny.
Oh, man.
They marry within so much that they needed some stray.
We need some DNA.
I guess.
Well, I think that is probably very true. But if they're going to make me give up my TV and live on that, it's going to be awfully hard.
Oh, I agree. Hmm. I can definitely agree with that. But now the deal was, you went and they held up a sheet with a little hole in it. Her husband held one side and her father held the other.
I'm sorry.
I caught that.
What was
that.
He saying?
What he's saying is, thy will have no visual contact with the missus as thee spreads thy seed.
Is that true?
There's a hole in the
sheet.
You
know what? I heard this story. It can't be true.
I don't know, man. That's what he was telling me. He said it was in a singles magazine.
Yeah.
After
a singles magazine that really needs to boost circulation.
Or something, I guess. Yeah. But,
generation after generation, I think the once a sheet between he and she.
Yes.
We've inbred for a while. Yes. You would rather not look. All right. Hey, Aaron, how you doing? You're 26 years old. What do you do for a living?
I'm an electrician.
You're an electrician?
Yes.
All right. You working on a new building, new construction?
Right now I'm working at the MGM Grand.
Cool. That must be hot, huh?
Yeah, please.
I mean, they have more light bulbs to burn out there than anywhere.
I've had electricity for a long while.
Losing.
All right, Aaron, thank you very much. The Amish, interesting. We're looking for something about Saudi Arabia. You know, again, over here, we just sort of half know what they do with their women.
But I will say, if we could get an Amish guy in Vegas, there's a news story, because if there's one,
he's excommunicated.
The Amish avoid, I would think it would be Vegas.
Carl in Las Vegas, hello.
Hello.
Carl, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, sir. How are you this morning?
Great today. Carl, you have been to Saudi Arabia?
Yes, I have.
All right. What do you do in Saudi Arabia, by the way?
Well, actually, I do construction work there.
Okay.
I work on some large residential homes there.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to let you know that the people are incredibly nice people. They're right. Just like us.
But they have different rules.
No, they call that cultural rules, sir.
Yeah, I understand.
Yes.
They have rules.
Yes.
Rules that here would be considered oppressive, no?
Yes.
Okay.
I would say to Americans, yes. To Westerners, yes. But culturally for them, it's okay, because a lot of it's religious.
So the women are happy being all hot and sweaty under all that stuff?
It is, but it's part of the culture that goes hundreds of years. As you know, that part of the world is...
No, I understand. I understand.
Right?
Sure.
But a lot of them don't have a problem with it, because it goes culturally. It goes back to just how it's part of religious purposes, its purposes of a lot of things. It's like, for Westerners, it's different, because we're very progressive. We always have to make changes. We've got a lot of things that make Westerners...
Do you think that people are basically different in that? Don't you think they have desires to, wear something light and airy, or not? Carl's cell phone died.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I wanted to find out how the roads were over there, too, I imagine. I mean, no women and all the gas you could possibly ever want to use.
Gas is 2 cents a gallon.
It's got to be like paradise.
888-947-8338. If Carl wants, the sense I was getting from Carl was that he thought maybe we were being a little irreverent on the deal, and that
disrespectful
we
in the culture.
Be more we're not trying to be disrespectful, God knows, but more curious than disrespectful as to how that could be fun.
You know, it's all they know. It's that's
right.
That's
you can't
that's
drive.
A, that's a lousy argument for. It's the way things should be, because it's all they know.
Right.
It's,
in that case, we would just close down schools in West Virginia, because that's all they
that's
know.
All they know.
Let them all just stay in the same family, because that's all they know. No, we provide lots of opportunity and freedom. And if it's really true that women are extremely happy in that role, not being allowed to drive, all covered up. I like the covered up thing. I said that. I'm
but
very respectful of that.
Subservient, completely subservient to the male.
If that's really true, it would be cool to talk to one and have her give us a good talking to. Why? You know?
Could they call us? Would they be allowed to speak to strange men?
I don't think any that are actively practicing that. There's got to be some women who said, the hell with this. I'm going to Vegas.
Yeah. If there's a Saudi Arabian woman alone on the loose in Vegas, she can call. Okay. Anyway, so we do have Carl is back. Let's let Carl finish, because Carl had some definite thoughts on Saudi Arabian women. Carl, go ahead.
I'm sorry I missed you, and I guess my cell phone went out.
I knew that.
I just wanted to make a quick point. I don't think you guys are. I think you're not bashing them or nothing. It's not that at all.
Okay.
I just think that we're not educated enough.
We aren't. That's what we're trying to do, is be educated.
And the program is very important. Like you were saying, the guy made a lot of money, $2 million a year, and I make wonderful money also.
You do in Las Vegas? What do you do, Carl?
Well, no, not in Las Vegas. I do still do work in the Middle East.
Oh, in the Middle East, they pay you great.
Yeah, as you know.
Better than Las Vegas?
Well, better than America.
Better anywhere in America.
Yeah, Yankee know-how, man. Yeah.
Money.
Right.
There's a lot of money there. And I agree with you. There is people that do have problems, even in their country. There, you know, there, it's the world's smaller, and everybody's, you know, everybody has satellites. So a lot of people in the younger generation probably are seeing the Western life.
What would a Saudi Arabian woman's reaction to an MTV video be?
Oh, I tell you, they watch it.
Yeah?
But a lot of it is, I mean, even I have friends that come over here, and they adjust to the Western type of life. They don't cover, and they adjust to the Western life.
All right.
But when they go home, they go back to their culture and their traditions, and I think it's because that's the way, it, you know, it is.
Yes, however, despite what you've said, Carl, the fight is on in Saudi Arabia for women to be able to drive.
Yes, and I'm going to tell you something about that. I find that all women really do is they have chauffeurs. That's all they have. Someone drives them everywhere they go.
That ain't bad. Maura's got her veil on.
Reconsider it.
Right. So everywhere they go, they sit in the back, they do, but it's actually they're the chauffeurs. And if I didn't have to drive everywhere I went, I think it would be easier. But anyway, I think it's a great show. I think it's something that I think we should all get to know, you know, different parts of the world. But the world is smaller.
It is smaller.
And they are aware. And you're right. They are fighting. Now, the younger generation, which I know some, would love to drive because it's just, you know, hey, we see it on television. Why can't we do it? So,
right.
Again.
And then in that sense, it's in a way sad that all our cultures are kind of merging and homogenizing because you won't be able to keep people down, even though that's nice, I suppose. But it's kind of also, I mean, their culture is going to change. It's going
to
become more like us, whether they want to or not.
It has to, and it will, because more of the kids there, the younger generation, is being educated in our country.
I believe it was said best in that movie with Mel Gibson where he's where it was wearing a skirt. What movie was that? He was talking about
Braveheart.
Freedom.
Braveheart.
Braveheart, you know.
Yes.
You can't stop freedom.
You can't take away our freedom. You can buy our oil for $7
right.
a barrel.
You're right. And I just want to make a point is that, you know what, they're a lot like us in a lot of ways. And, you know, and I think it's important that you do shows like this. And actually, I'm happy you are because we're all learning about each other. And the idea of them, you know, we portray them as most being terrorists and people like that. And you know what? That's something that they don't like about us doing. And I think, you know, what you're doing is educating everybody, and I think it's a great show, and I think you should continue.
Thank you, Carl. We appreciate you listening.
I wanted to know if they still chop stuff off, though. I mean, that's...
Carl. You think Carl saw that?
Well, he would know.
No.
I mean, if it...
Oh, you mean if you saw...
Is that a myth?
If you're walking through the mall, do you see the fingers chopped off?
Well, you're going up to an intersection, the traffic guard has a sign taped to his wrist.
Yeah.
He didn't hold it up. That's how you'd know.
Twisted Tunes.
Can I have your dimensions, please? Will the real big ladies please stand up? I repeat, will the big boned ladies please stand up? Y'all act like you never loved a wide woman before. Jug shaking the floor, creased hips just to fit through the door. Climb that ass like Mount Rushmore, and of course when you're through, you broke some furniture. Like Caligula, but wait, you're kidding. He didn't just say what I think he did he? And Ally McBeal said... Nothing, you idiots. Allie's half dead. We're cooking her up in my kitchen. Don't figured women love skinny men. Piggy eating slim ladies. I'm sick of them. Look at me. Walking around grabbing humongo butts. Eats cheeks, tipping the scales at about 52. Big girls are nothing but sex spots. Rolling her flour and then I just look for the wet spot. I'm a big lady man. Not to know how great a plus size is. Of course they know what a big girl Hummer is. Before they reached the third grade, they watched the Lewinsky covers, didn't they? But you guys are gonna lie and say you never tried one. Never went trolling last call and laid right by one. Just like a moped, don't want your friends to see you ride one. Cause when they do come along, it's hard to hide one. So will the real big ladies please stand up and give me a peek at them triple D cups and be proud to be out of the norm and breaking the mold. Then one more time, loud as you can, here we go. I'm a big lady man, queen size ladies, all the ladies I'm dating. Shady when the sun comes up, so eat right up, don't throw
bet there's a real big lady lover in all of us.
Michael York's list of acting credits is a long and impressive one. A veteran of the London stage, Michael made the transition into film in 1966's The Taming of the Shrew. Starred in Logan's Run, The Island of Dr. Moreau, three different Three Musketeers movies, that must be interesting, and more. Recently, Austin Powers, the Spy Who Shagged Me, and The Omega Code. Michael's newest work is a sequel film to The Omega Code, and we were arguing earlier about how to pronounce it. I think the safest thing to do is to ask him. Michael York, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
How you doing?
I'm doing great, as they say.
Excellent. Happy to hear it. How do you pronounce your new movie?
Well, it's called Megiddo.
Megiddo. See, the Spike, I knew you were wrong.
But it could be Megiddo.
Okay. No,
you said like MacGyver. MacGyver. You said Megiddo.
MacGyver. I thought it was the guy who made things out of coat hangers.
And you know when Spike says these things? He always acts like Cliff Clavin, like he actually really knows.
Actually, Bert, the Megiddo was an ancient sect of warriors who lived around Mesopotamian times.
Megiddo is where the Battle of Armageddon was fought. So,
it's Armageddon, actually.
Yeah. Armageddon was fought there, really?
Oh, yes, it's a real place.
Wow.
In Israel. So,
was the real Armageddon anything like the Bruce Willis movie? Or probably not.
It hasn't happened yet, hopefully. It's
a mythical thing.
Maybe he got it right.
Doubtfully.
And it's also a religion. I searched Megiddo.com, and I came up with some people that have a new way of reading the Bible. Do they have anything to do with this film?
Not that I'm aware of. No, oh. This is a more traditional, it's an interpretation. It's all there in the book of Revelation. That's the sort of starting off point. And, of course, the book of Revelation is the source of some of the greatest stories.
It's the coolest book in the Bible, other than the end, of course. Right. But the rest of it is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, when we interviewed the guy who played the Jesus Christ in the movie Jesus Christ, and he told us he was an atheist, it was horrible. Do you have...
It was.
He should have been fired on the spot. Do you have strong personal Christian beliefs, or are you just a good paying gig?
No, I was raised a Christian, and I think the ethical underpinning of the religion is excellent. I think we all have to find our own way, and maybe sometimes we go away from it. I was actually in I played John the Baptist once in Franco Zeffirelli's Jesus of Nazareth, and that was
beautiful,
an extraordinary experience.
Mm. Did you stand in the water and do the baptizing?
I did indeed.
Wow.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Nice.
It was very knowing how powerful, this story is, how meaningful, how undeniable it is, how central it is to so many people's lives. You can't dismiss it. But one doesn't want to proselytize. So I think this is the great thing about the Omega Code and Megiddo. They're based on these stories, but they don't whack you over the head with it.
I was going to say, what kind of a production are we going to see? Is it? I'm assuming beautiful filming and scenery and a real traditional soundtrack and a powerful story.
And it's sort of playing Hollywood at its own game. It has all wonderful special effects and even more elaborate special effects than the previous one, the sequel. But you never know. You can have all the special effects in the world and things don't work. It's whether it captures that indefinable spirit, the things that make things work. And that's what's so great about the movies, but nobody really knows how to achieve this. It's sort of, it either happens or it doesn't.
Can you tell...
Living in Las Vegas, you know the odds.
Yeah.
Michael, can you tell during the movie, or do you have to wait to see it to know how on target you were?
You can't tell. It because certainly from the acting end, you're basically providing raw material for others to edit, to cut into shape, to... It's indefinable.
So you give it your best...
Oh,
reading
yeah.
And your best everything.
You give it your 1,000%, and then you can walk away from it. That's my point of view.
Right. You've done your
really
best.
You've really done your utmost. Right. Then it's in the lap of the gods, you know?
Tell me about the feeling you have, though, after finishing the movie, when you're going, like it's in an hour, you're going to see it finished for the first time.
Well, it is quite frightening. And obviously, the first time through, you're not watching the movie. You tend to watch yourself.
You see like a freckle or a mole you haven't seen before.
Yeah, you're seeing all these extraneous things like, oh, they left that scene out. Oh, they moved that around. Oh, that works. Now, having been in the business 30 years, I can see movies made, 30 years ago where I've forgotten the ending. And I can watch them like a...
You can watch your own movie and go, I have no idea how this comes out.
Absolutely.
That's amazing. And now, so do you go, when you go to see your own movie the first time, do you bring a friend whose opinion you really trust with you?
Yeah, of course I do. It's often my wife who can be very objective. Mm-hmm. And you learn objectivity. You know, the first time it was torture because, everything looked. And then you learn that this is part of the creative process, to be able to stand back from it and, not let ego get in the way and to be, cruelly objective.
Michael, have you ever given a brilliant performance that ended up on the floor somewhere?
Oh, yes. Yes, I mean, it happens,
Well, we're going to give you an opportunity, Michael. Go ahead and do those lines for us now.
All right.
Yeah, give us something.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding at all. Go right ahead.
No, you know, it happens, but then it's the key thing is you have to murder your darling.
Kill your babies. It's a creative saying in creative school.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's one of those key lessons you have to learn.
The guy who taught it to me called it kill your babies. I think murder your darlings is better.
That's the British.
The English way. Yeah, it's always better. You're a classically Shakespearean trained actor. How does it feel to be noted for something like Austin Powers? Is that just another paycheck to you, or is that something you're really proud of?
Of course, the first thing I say, and I'm sure there's an element of truth in it, is that, Shakespeare would have loved Austin Powers. Mm. You know, he had the same bawdy humor. Look at those early plays. They're absolutely filthy.
Absolutely.
And he loved larger-than-life characters. He created over 1,000 himself. Austin Powers is what it is. He's outrageously funny. He's naughty, but basically he's nice. That's what I like about him. He's not vicious.
Michael, I suspect you have a pretty good sense of humor, actually. You played the Three Musketeers in three Musketeers movies.
Yes.
And one of them was called The Four Musketeers.
That's right, yeah.
D'Artagnan, why were you standing there as a classically trained actor going, it's supposed to be three.
It makes no sense. Otherwise, it would be the four.
No. They did this huge movie, and then at one point there was a decision to cut it into two parts. So, what more logical to have the Three Musketeers, and then D'Artagnan joins them, and they become the Four Musketeers. So.
By the way, there is a book that is out now that if you want to get a little more on Michael, it's A Shakespearean Actor Prepares. That's is that becoming a bit of a lost art? Is that why you wrote the book? Or?
No, we wrote the book. You know, Shakespeare's never gone out of favor. I mean, he's there are thousands of books, but we wanted to write something from the actor director's point of view, presupposing that Shakespeare, and he's a bit of a mystery. We don't quite know who he was, but certainly he was someone who was writing plays for actors to interpret and box office and. Within the key, he was on your side. Within the plays are the keys as to how he wanted them done. So this was the setting off point. But it also became a play about Shakespeare and the Elizabethan theater.
And you wrote this with someone else, right?
I wrote it with my best friend of 40 years, Adrian Brine.
Right.
And it took us 6 years. He's an actor director, so this was very firmly our point of view. You know, there are lots of books by academics, but this. Was the premise, the theatrical point of view.
Does anybody own Shakespeare? I mean, who gets money when you use that? Is there a Shakespeare estate?
I think it's in the public realm.
Yeah, it's not like Jimi Hendrix where all the relatives got together and said,
somebody's getting shafted. I mean, that's...
Yeah, but can you imagine if there were royalties to pay? I mean, he would, the Shakespeare.
He's bigger than Elvis.
Absolutely, yeah.
Michael York in Los Angeles. The movie opens in October. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
We'll be watching for it, and it is a pleasure to talk to you.
And likewise.
After more than a half a century, legendary fire safety spokesman Smokey Bear has a twist to his message about fire prevention in the wilderness. The familiar slogan, "Only you can prevent forest fires," remember that?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, that's been replaced. "Only you can prevent wildfires." Why the change? After so many years and after everyone knows the other, "Only you can prevent forest fires," I don't know. We thought we'd go to the, well, not the horse's mouth, but hear it from the bear's mouth.
Smokey himself.
Smokey Bear is on the phone. Welcome to the show, Smokey. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Bob.
Smokey Bear, are you talking to us from the forest?
Yes, just putting out a fire in Florida.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's the thing. It's not the forest anymore.
It's a wild land. What do you call it?
Well, trailer parks mostly. People riding along, flipping a cigarette out the window. Anything can burn. That's the reason for the message.
So instead of a forest fire, it's a wildfire.
Well, that's right. People think that if they're not up in the mountains, they can do whatever the hell they want with a cigarette.
Uh-huh. Now, the forest is bear habitat, though.
Yes, it is.
Right? I mean, and I've also heard about bears actually getting into garbage and stuff. Your habitat being crowded out, do you not live in the middle of Yellowstone anymore? Where do you live?
Oh, I've got a penthouse condo in Los Angeles now. Big time celebrity.
Oh, that's right. You're not your average bear.
If I want to slum around, I'll go out into the forest, uh-huh, knock down a few females, you know, get a little bear.
Get a little bear tail?
Oh, yeah.
I bet Smokey, I bet you're like Puff Daddy when you come into town.
I am the man. Fat little PH.
That's cool. What else have you been up to lately?
Well, just finished hibernating for the winter.
Right.
Still kind of shaking off the slumber.
Got it.
Just finished giving myself a bath.
A bath?
Licked my balls this morning.
Excellent, man. I wish I could do that.
Oh, yeah. I bet you do. You're lucky this is a phoner. Man, have I got ball breath.
And you're an older bear, too, Smokey. That's good.
Yeah.
You can still perform.
Wait a minute. Can a bear lick his balls?
Oh, yes, he can. Nobody else can, though.
Well, dogs do. I can't picture a bear doing that.
I meant my balls, Bob.
No, I didn't mean yours, Joe.
I know.
All right. Are you ever, Smokey, recognized by your fans?
Well, that's the beauty of being a bear. When you want the publicity, you just put the flat brim hat on.
Right.
When I want to go out and maul a couple campers, just take the hat off and I'll be the other bears.
That's perfect.
It's really the best of both worlds.
Uh-huh. And why the change in slogans again? Only you can prevent forest fires. Only you can prevent wildfires.
Well, we wanted folks to know that their carelessness affects everywhere, not just up in the forest.
Right.
And we had a tough time coming up with the wildfire slogan.
Could you, by the way, shoot some of those birds?
What?
Birds.
Just, no,
the birds are a little loud.
Why don't I step inside my Lamborghini for a moment? Maybe how's that better?
Much quieter, thanks.
Okay. A lot of the slogans we wanted to use weren't quite good enough.
Oh, you had other slogan ideas.
Oh, yeah.
What were they?
Well, one I was really behind was, "Hey, dumbass, how about putting out that campfire?"
That's a good one.
Yeah, I liked it. There was one, "Friends, don't let friends start forest fires."
That's good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But my personal favorite, "How'd you like a paw up your ass, buddy?" I didn't think that would sell with the kiddies.
I think it would play perfectly on MTV. I think it would be great.
I'm thinking it would, too.
Pop a paw in your ass.
Yep.
All right. And by the way, I've heard, I guess there's a press release on this, that you'll be starring in a new television commercial this summer. Is that right?
Yes. We're going to have a new campaign. It's going to be kind of neat. It's a couple out in the forest enjoying a campfire, and you cut away to an outline of a body.
Ooh.
And what you find out, though, is it's a deer's body.
Wow.
And the deer is an innocent victim of your carelessness.
Oh.
That's a deep message.
That's touching and kind of sad, too, huh?
Well, that's the whole point of wildfires, Bob. They're kind of sad.
All right.
But I love doing commercial work. I'm getting a lot of work lately. Did you see me in the Smirnoff ad?
I did not.
Well, you know, where the guy and his buddy are in the woods and it shoots honey all over his friend and I chase his friend up a tree?
I didn't see that. Is that a real ad?
I saw that. I had no idea that was you, though.
Well, I get all the work because I'm the only pro the Bears have.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Did you see the one where me and the fisherman are wrestling over the salmon?
I did see that. That's you?
That's me. Give him a couple quick jabs, and then he thought it'd be cute to kick me in the nuts. Tell you what.
Where you just finished licking.
I'm telling you. They cut out the part where I ripped his innards open.
Yeah, well, that didn't make for good copy. Smokey Bear, nice to talk to you. So the new slogan is, only you can prevent wildfires.
That's right.
Every workday for 4.5 years, Jay Landers would climb into his worn 1983 Mazda sedan and drive to his job in a windowless office at a quiet 3-story building in Encino, California. It was a top-secret assignment. No one, not even close friends and relatives, could know the details of his work for the motion picture... I thought it was porn. For the Motion Picture Association of America. You see, Jay Landers was a movie rater. He was one of those guys that decides G, PG... PG-13, R, NC-17. I guess my first question, Jay.
Yes.
What about X? I guess they don't need anybody to decide, right?
No, X actually was replaced with the NC-17 symbol, so they mean the same thing.
But I mean, the movies, you know, the kind of movies I'm talking about.
People also have
jobs where they drop into little quiet buildings in California. They don't have to rate those. Nobody has to approve of those, right?
The rating system is purely voluntary. Those who submit film, unless you're a member of the Motion Picture Association as a studio, you agree to submit your films through the rating board.
Mm-hmm.
But independent filmmakers don't have to submit their films for ratings in order to get them onto the market, though a lot of theaters will only accept rated films. So it's... one of those kind of situations.
Let's say my son and I are in the backyard imitating the latest episode of Jackass. I've set up a hanging noose, and he wants to, hop into the hanging noose as a running car heads his way. It'll hopefully save him instead of crashing into him before he actually breaks his neck. And we film this in the backyard, and I want to get it rated.
Yes.
Could I bring it to you?
Yes,
even
you
as
could.
An independent?
You could submit that to the Motion Picture Rating Board, and they would rate that for you.
What would that be rated, by the way?
Pardon? It's hard to decide just based on a verbal description.
You have to see how much blood there was.
It would depend on the visuals that you would have there, and it sounds if no one was actually physically injured or
mm-hmm.
killed, maybe a PG-13 possibly.
Got it.
How about if a girl behind the car on the sidewalk is flashing her breast during the whole ordeal?
What does that make it?
That would probably get you an R.
I'd get you an R. Now, where is the beginning, where is the definition of breast? Where's the beginning of the breast when it comes to you guys moving?
Well, it's, that's a problematic area. The only real guidelines that exist are those that Jack Valenti has laid down in a little pamphlet that is available to the public. On the Motion Picture Association website, or you can order it through the Classification and Rating Administration in Encino.
So you can see it.
And he defines as best he can what he thinks of the different rating categories mean, but they're very general.
But where does the breast start? What constitutes breast? Does it have something to do with how long you see it? Does it have something to do with where it starts, like the the shaded area, the areola?
Well, basically, raters attempt to put everything in context and view everything in context.
But do you guys ever sit around and say, I don't know, is that a breast? I think it is. Do you ever sit around and have disagreements?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And there's a lot of little kind of minutiae that is involved in the job. Did I really see what I think I saw? And some people say, well, I'm not sure. And we may even have the projectionist stop the film, go back and we'll all view it again, focusing on that particular aspect of a scene that someone thought they saw something potentially objectionable or something that might have put the film in a different rating category. So, yeah, that goes on.
I've noticed something in films in the last few years that I don't think was ever allowed before.
Okay.
And the first movie that I just jumped out at me was the movie Wild Things. The male star, what was his name, Spike? The shower scene.
Matt Dillon.
Kevin Bacon?
No, Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon's penis. And I was repulsed, by the way. I don't think men's should or sexual organs should be in the movies.
At all?
No, women's are fine, but men's, for some reason, I don't see the point. But Kevin Bacon's, you know, and it was not a happy penis. It was just a, you know, not at attention. It was at rest.
Placid.
Right.
And I wondered, first off, is that a change that's allowed now? Or is that it have to do with the penis not being involved in any sexual activity?
Well, because there are no precise rules in these terms, mm-hmm. it all depends on the group of raters at that time watching that particular film and the scene within that film and deciding whether they feel that element is sufficient to raise the film as a whole to an NC-17 level, which would put it out of bounds to anyone under 18 in theatrical release.
Now, what if you had said, oh, Kevin Bacon's penis, NC-17? What would the studio traditionally have done? Whacked it off?
Well, first, there's often dissent on the board. Okay, the board is an average of about 12 parents, and you'll often get cases where there are split votes, and it's a majority rule. So a lot of films, and people don't realize this, are rated based on, say, a split vote of 7-5 or 8-4 or whatever.
Did you rate that film, by the way? That was during your tenure.
That was during my tenure, so you could say it's safe to assume that I did. But I can't discuss the details of films according to a...
You can't say I was for or against Kevin Bacon's penis.
No, I can't say that.
Who could?
That would be a breach of the confidentiality agreement.
Well, you're a man. I'm going to say you were against it. Probably.
But basically, if the filmmakers don't want the rating that the majority of the board has assigned to the film, they can choose to edit it and try to get the rating they want, or they can appeal the rating to an appeals board made up of mysterious motion picture insiders who we don't even know the identities of those people.
Jay, we always hear about stuff getting taken out of films so they can get a more favorable rating. It was just, what's the juiciest thing you ever saw that you were forced that the studio was forced to take out?
The studios, you know, are this is their own decision to remove things, so it's not a coercive thing. If they
right, they resubmit it removed.
They that's their choice.
Too bad, because otherwise these guys would sit around and they'd have this incredible film of all the stuff they cut out. You could just string that all together for Christmas parties and stuff like that.
Killer.
It would be great.
Well, yeah, this is routine. It happens all the time that films are edited down to get a less stringent rating. It happens virtually every day there. And
sometimes it happens because of how, not whether something gets shown or not, but how long we see it
right,
for.
Right, the duration of a scene.
Yeah.
Say with sex scenes particularly, if the scene is like in real time and it has a beginning, middle, and an end, and so it's like it's as if you were in the corner watching what was going on, that kind of scene where it's very graphic and all would tend to get you an NC-17.
So the same scene, much shorter.
If you jump around with your camera angles and such and shorten it, you're probably going to get yourself into the R range. So
like, when you guys are reviewing Bound, for example, for the first time, and here's Meg Tilly and Gina Gershon making the muffin with two backs, and they had to cut most of that out or change the angle to get a more favorable rating.
What's the muffin with two backs?
It's one of the greatest lesbian love scenes ever put in a non-porn movie. Did you guys get to see that before it was cut down?
Yeah, well, I can't get into details.
Yes, he did.
I'm not going to say that anything you're saying is incorrect.
Okay.
What else can't you tell us that you didn't see?
I helped to rate most of the films between September of 1995 and March of 2000. So any film that received a rating during that time, chances are I saw it and contributed.
And there's only 12 people. I mean, there's only 12 guys in the whole
world.
It's
like a jury, actually.
Right.
Right. And my concerns are that there needs to be reform of the system. It's too the whole process is too subjective. I think it could be a lot more guided by standards that everybody is aware of, including the filmmakers, so that they're not having to subject their films to edits so often. You know, if they had a better sense in the production process of what would get you a certain rating, then there would be less edits to make at the end, you know?
Yeah.
There's not a great deal of communication going on between the rating side and the...
Well, they don't, but they, if communication means all of a sudden a new swimming pool or hot tub appears at your house, and, you know, you become like the college football player who's
sure.
not supposed to be paid, but sure seems to be doing okay. Yeah.
No, I don't see that as a...
Not a problem. I wouldn't see it as a problem either, but they're worried about that, right?
Well, they... My problem is that the industry representatives control the system. Mr. Jack Valenti, head of the Motion Picture Association, is basically the one who decides on the policies, the standards, how the whole operation is run. I see that as a problem. I think that the system should be independent of the industry much more profoundly, though, of course, not something run by government. So I think there needs to be a middle way where, say, a nonprofit charity, in a sense, runs the show.
And the Catholic Church, they should do it. No,
no,
maybe that would be bad.
Not that.
But Jack Valenti is pissed at you, right?
I don't know. He basically, I assume he probably is not pleased.
He doesn't want you out talking about this stuff.
No, but he basically ignores me in hopes, I think, that
I'm... Well, he's got Joe Lieberman to deal with today. Jack and Joe are going at it. My one question for you is, do you have to watch a whole movie from beginning to end? Or when you see a guy pleasuring himself with an apple pie, can you pretty much say, I've seen enough, I know what I'm going to
rate back. Send the pie back.
No, the films are watched in their entirety, and notes are taken during the process, and full reports are written afterwards about the film.
By the way, is it torturous when it's a really bad movie, like the newest Star Wars movie? Is it like, God?
It can be pretty torturous,
yeah.
But there's a great sense of collegiality amongst the raiders, and, you know, Mystery Science Theater 2000, you know, where you see people talking at the screen?
Yeah.
In addition to doing their rating work, raiders will sometimes have a nice little banter going on, not so that it interferes with what they're doing, but
right.
it makes it actually kind of an enjoyable experience, even if the film is atrocious.
Jay, I'd rate your interview G. Thank you very much.
I tried to keep myself under control.
We tried. We were pushing for NC-17.
You bet we were, man.